passion for God and compassion for our neighbor, reaching our region and beyond with the life-changing message of Jesus Christ. This is Faith Church. And now, Pastor Kurt Truxas.
There's this sudden change. It almost doesn't feel right because we go from this thick tension about who Jesus is and this conflict with the religious leaders to all of a sudden we're talking about sheep. Like Jesus all of a sudden is now we're out in the pasture. We're talking about, I'm the good shepherd. That's a weird change. I was reading this week and I'm like, Jesus, are you ADD? I mean, sudden change of subject. Why did you go from Fight Club in chapter 9 to all of a sudden I'm the good shepherd in chapter 10? Maybe Jesus was trying to bring the tension in the room down a little bit. Give him a verbal tranquilizer. Start talking about sheep. Soft and cute and cuddly. That just didn't feel right to me. The other thing that doesn't feel right to me about this sudden change is all of a sudden it feels very effeminate. It feels so nice and soft. And we were at Fight Club in chapter 9, and now all of a sudden I'm feeling flannel graph, cotton balls. You guys remember that? I grew up with, you know, cotton balls on the flannel graph. Here are the sheep, and he's the good shepherd. But what happened to, like, strong Jesus? What happened to Jesus who was standing up to the religious leaders and saying, I am God in the flesh? Well, let me just want to tell you, as I studied this week, I realized that this passage is not at all what I had felt or known for years. It's very different. This passage is just laden with testosterone. This passage in John chapter 10 is totally in your face, Jesus. Right with those religious leaders. This passage is really all about leadership and Jesus taking some strong leadership. How do we get there? From flannel graph and cotton balls? Well, let's find out. The first thing I need to do before we stick our finger in the text in chapter 10 is I need to give you some background. And without this background, we're going to totally miss what's happening in this passage. So here we go. Why this sudden change? Chapter 9, tension, you can cut it with a knife. Chapter 10, all of a sudden, soft and cuddly sheep. Did you ever think that maybe there wasn't a change? Maybe what Jesus is doing is he's still talking about leadership. But he's doing it in a different way that most of us just flies over our head. Jesus is talking about this leadership issue, but what he's doing is he's reaching into an experience that the Jewish leaders have, a background that they're quite familiar with, a background that Jesus is familiar with. But for most of us, we have forgotten about it or we didn't know about it. I got thinking, maybe this background is found in the Old Testament. And as I started studying the Old Testament, I discovered there are lots of passages in the Old Testament that talk about sheep and shepherd. And even as the people of God being sheep. But there's one passage in particular that seems to be the key that unlocks this sudden transition between chapters. It's Ezekiel 34. And I know you're probably all a little rusty on Ezekiel. And that's why it doesn't jump out to us. Let me tell you what's going on in Ezekiel 34. Ezekiel actually was written back in the sort of the days of Daniel. And what had gone on was there were spiritual leaders of the people who were just really acting sort of bogus. I mean, they're doing a bad job. They're bad leaders. And what God does is he sort of says, what you guys are is you are like bad shepherds, is what he calls them in Ezekiel 34. All you are doing is you're using the sheep. You're taking advantage of the sheep. You're just using them to pad your influence and your power and make you look bigger and better. You're bad shepherds. And actually, it's a good analogy, because if you understand in that culture, shepherds could be very abusive towards their sheep. And if you're a sheep, do you have any choice beside to sit there and take it? No, you're a sheep. You just sort of have to deal with it. And that's what it was like for the people of God. They were just having to deal with the bad leadership of their shepherds. And when Jesus all of a sudden starts talking about, I'm the good shepherd, what he's saying is, and you're the bad shepherds. He reaches into their background and he pulls out of their memory banks Ezekiel 34, where God is just reaming the spiritual leaders of Israel for being bad shepherds of the sheep. Now think what's just taken place in John chapter 9. Jesus heals a man born blind from birth. What do the religious leaders do? Kick him out of the synagogue. Because he's now a threat to their power. Because Jesus has healed him. That's like bad leadership, isn't it? That's not the way you treat a guy that's just been healed by God. So what Jesus is doing here is he's tying into Ezekiel 34. And now, interestingly, when you follow Ezekiel 34, what happens is about the middle of the chapter, God says, you know, I am so tired of bad shepherds of my sheep. One day, we're going to change it all. In fact, I'm going to be the shepherd of my sheep. I'm going to be the good shepherd of my sheep. Now, look what he says here. Ezekiel 34, 15 through 16. I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep, and I myself will make them lie down, declares the Lord. I will seek the lost. I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured. I will strengthen the weak, and the fat and the strong I will destroy. I will feed them in justice. So God says, one of these days, I'm tired of the bad shepherds abusing my people. I'm just going to do it myself. And then as you get a little further into the chapter of Ezekiel 34, we find out a little bit more about who this person is that's going to shepherd God's people. It's going to be God, but who else is it going to be? It's going to be a man. A man from the line of David. It says, and I will set over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he shall feed them. He shall feed them and be their shepherd, and I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David shall be prince among them. I've got a question. Who is the man who is God? Who will be the good shepherd of God's people? From the line of David, who is it? Thank you, Carl. I can always count on Carl for an answer. It's good. It's Jesus. Jesus is the fulfillment of Ezekiel chapter 34. So chapter 9 closes with bad shepherds abusing God's people. Chapter 10 opens with all of a sudden Jesus saying, guess what? Ezekiel 34 is fulfilled. The good shepherd, that's me, God's taken over, is here. That's the background that is going on here. So what we have here is this passage is all about leadership. Who can you follow? Who should be leading your life? There's a lot of bad shepherds out there who want to use you, but there is a new shepherd in town, a good shepherd. God is now leading his people in the flesh, in the man of Jesus. And this passage is about, should Jesus be the leader of your life? And if he should, what kind of leader is he? Can you trust him? Knowing that background, we can begin to put our finger in the text. Now, one other thing before I put the finger in the text, I should address something culturally here. And that is really I want to talk to us postmodern people who think we don't need a leader. because we don't follow anybody. We're self-made men. We're self-made women. You know, we think of ourselves as ultra-independent in our current society. But I just want to tell you, I just don't think that's true. Do I need a leader? Folks, everybody is following somebody. They are. The only question is, who are you following and are they worth following? Those are the only questions out there. This is a fill in the blank. Everybody is following somebody. The only questions are, who are you following? And number two, are they worth following? Let me give you an example. My teenagers, they like to style themselves as, you know, we're independent, we're teenagers. And then they see what I dress in. And they go, Dad, you have such a hip 80s wardrobe. I would not be caught dead in it. And they tell me that, like, we have to buy you new clothes, Dad, because it is, they're just old. Well, what is that? They're following. They're following somebody. They're following their peer group. And obviously, I haven't learned how to follow that peer group yet because I still have my 80s clothes. Give you another example. Young adults. And maybe think about the pressure that is on you. Even though you think of yourself as somebody who is independent and not following anybody, all of a sudden, if you're single and you get to be about age 25, there's pressure to do what? Get married. You get married, and all of a sudden, well, my friends drive a certain car. Isn't it time that I upgrade off my old clunker? My friends went from an apartment to a house. Maybe I should be upgrading from an apartment to a house. There's all kinds of pressure out there. Everybody is following somebody. The only question is, who are you following? And then, are they worth following? I mean, do they really care about you? Or are they just bad shepherds trying to use you? So let's go ahead and put our finger in the text. The first thing we learn here in this text is the question is, who is going to follow the leadership of Jesus? So who is going to follow the leadership of Jesus? Verses 1 through 6. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. And when he has brought out all of his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Oh, a stranger they will not follow, but they will follow him for him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. The picture that they would understand in that day is there was a community sheepfold that people would generally put their sheep in at night. And that's what would protect the sheep during the evening hours. And even though they were a big mess of sheep all put together, when the shepherd came in the morning, he would call his sheep. He would call them by name. And out of this big mass of sheep, the ones that knew the shepherd, the sheep of the shepherd, would pull out and follow him in the morning. Now, for the average observer, before the shepherd came, you wouldn't know who his sheep were. But once the shepherd came, you would know clearly, because they would follow him. And what we see here is only Jesus' sheep will follow Jesus' voice. Only Jesus' sheep will follow Jesus' voice. And we've seen this consistently throughout the Gospel of John. What do we see in chapter 6? It says, and he said, this is why I told you that no one can come to me unless it is granted him by the Father. Jesus has been preaching in crowds, and some people respond to Jesus, and they follow Jesus. And other people hear the exact same information, and they scratch their heads, and they go, that guy's weird. And other people are like, that's the Son of God. Remember, we saw this in chapter 9 as well. The man born blind had his eyes open to see and understand who Jesus is. The Pharisees and the religious leaders, They see it, but it doesn't connect because they're not Jesus' sheep. They don't respond to Jesus' voice. About John 8:47, "And whoever is of God hears the words of God. The reason why you do not hear them is you're not of God." Let me just give you some application points here. When I was younger, I really wrestled with trying to be able to prove my faith. You guys ever have that? You want to prove your faith to somebody? You know you love Jesus Christ. You want to follow Jesus Christ. And you have Josh McDowell's evidence that demands a verdict. And you have the ontological proof. And Jordan knows these things. The cosmological proof. You have all these proofs. So you can prove that God is real. And that you can prove that Jesus is real. And you try and explain this. And you try to apply it. You try and share it with people, and you can share that evidence with people, and they just look at you and say, I don't get it. Why is that? According to the Bible, the evidence that your faith is real is that you have faith that is real. The evidence of our faith, let me say it this way, I like the way I wrote it down better. The evidence of our faith is actually the existence of our faith. The evidence of our faith is the existence of our faith, because it's not ultimately us choosing to follow Christ. Where does it all start? God. He opens our eyes to follow Him. So the existence of our faith actually is the evidence for our faith. He's the one who opens our eyes to the truth. And yeah, are there things like Josh McDowell stuff and all this other kind of stuff? Yeah, it's good stuff. But ultimately, it's a supernatural act of God. So you can't prove it. Let me give you another application. This is really helpful when it comes to sharing the gospel. It takes so much of the burden, at least as I was studying this week, I found it took the burden off of me. I don't know about you, but I have this burning desire to try and lead as many people as I can to Jesus Christ. I want people to know about how much God loves them through Jesus. What else could be better than that? And sometimes when I'm sharing the gospel, I do the best I can share, and I try and explain all different kinds of ways, and people just don't get it. And I get frustrated. I'm like, how could you not see this? Let me give you an example. I was on some of these trips you guys know recently. I went to Texas, and then we went to California. And you get stuck on the plane next to all different kinds of people. And I, even though I'd like to relax, I'm like, okay, God, you put me sovereignly. I remember the book of Daniel. You sovereignly placed me on this plane next to this person in seat 6A. And there's a reason. I have to try and at least use this opportunity to share with him about Jesus. So I start talking with this one guy about Jesus. He's a 25-year-old guy. He's really successful in his business. And I start asking him how he does his business, and he does it all through horoscopes. But he was very interested in about Jesus. So I tried to explain about Jesus, answer all of his questions about Jesus, and we were all done. He goes, so how does Jesus help me with my horoscopes? I'm like, no, it's not about the horoscopes. It's about Jesus. Like, no connection whatsoever. And I realized, you know what? That's okay. My job is not to create faith in somebody's heart. My job is to get them within the earshot of Jesus' voice. My job is not to create faith. My job is just to get them within the earshot of Jesus' voice. And Jesus' sheep will respond to Jesus' voice. Our job. You know, we don't say, how do I lead people to Christ? Invite them to church. They'll get within earshot of Jesus' voice. By the way, next week is a great time, Easter. Statistically, it's the time where people are most likely to accept an invitation to go to church. You can't get them to come to church. What are you going to do? Let's do a Bible study. Let's open the Bible. Let's read the Gospel of John. Let's read the book of Ephesians together. Get them within earshot of Jesus' voice, and Jesus will call them. Isn't that liberating? We don't create faith. Now let's go a little further in the text here. It moves from who follows the leadership of Jesus to what kind of leader is Jesus? Is he a bad shepherd or a good one? Well, the answer here is this. First of all, it says he is a leader who protects and provides abundantly. Protects and provides abundantly. So Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." Jesus is tying back into this group enclosure that the sheep would go at night. And the door was sort of a key deal. At night, the sheep were like, I know there's going to be wolves. There's going to be all kinds of stuff that's going to eat me as soon as the sun goes down. I have to get to that door. Because if I can go through that door, I will be safe. And this is what Jesus is saying. I'm the door. Would he be protecting us as sheep from? The wrath of God the Father that we fully deserve. What does the text say? Jesus said to them, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I am the door." The other thing was in the morning, where did the sheep want to go? They want to stay in the pen all day? That was protection by night, but they wanted to go out the door to get to the pastures by day. And what Jesus says here is, I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus is the way to abundant life. A lot of times people will tell you, oh, don't go to church. Don't follow Jesus because Jesus is there to suck your life away. And like, that's a life right from the pit of hell itself. Jesus is there to give us life, not to take our life. What could be more devastating? Living life disconnected from God, living life in bondage to sin, living life alone without purpose and hope, or reconnected with God, totally forgiven of our sin. Jesus came to give us life and to give us life abundantly. Let's move a little further into it. And it gets exciting here. It says, he is a leader who knows us completely, yet loves us fully. Knows us completely, yet loves us fully. And he says, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and he leaves the sheep and he flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. There are two really awesome parts right in here. The first is this contrast between a hired shepherd and the shepherd who owns the sheep. The hired shepherd sees a wolf coming. He sees a predator coming. He's like, you kidding? I'm not going to hang out for these dumb sheep. I'm out of here, dude. You can figure it out yourself. I'm going to save my own skin. But somebody who owns the sheep, somebody who loves the sheep, is willing to put himself between the wolf and the sheep. In fact, a really good shepherd who owned the sheep would even be willing to risk his life for the sheep. And that's what Jesus says he is. If we're sheep, he's willing to risk his life for us. And ultimately, we know he loses his life for us. It's pretty amazing. But the most amazing part of all in here is something that as I read it at first, I just skipped over it. But then as I unpacked it, it just amazed me. It says, as the Father knows the Son and the Son knows the Father, so Jesus knows us, his own sheep. I want you to imagine for a moment that we were able to hook you up last night to a special machine. This machine can reach into your mind and pull out in full HD, by the way, living color, all of your thoughts, all of your actions, and all of your memories for the last 10 years. And we sent an email out last night to everybody but you. And people came early because we were watching a 5-hour special, just the highlights of your life. But it's the highlights of every lustful thought, every unspoken word, and every thought that should have never even crossed your mind. Oh, just the absolute worst. And we put it on the screens. And everybody watched it for 5 hours before you walked in the door. Who would want to skip church that week? I think we would have, you know, pretty much of an absent building if we did that. Because we don't want people to know everything about us. But isn't this telling us? Jesus knows us completely. He knows everything there is to know about us. Every lustful thought, every hateful word, every time we've repented and gone right back to our sinful desires, he knows it all. But what does he do? He loves us completely. Even though he knows us fully, he goes to the cross and he dies in our place for our sin. Folks, everybody is following somebody. The only question is, who are you following and are they worth it? Is there anybody you would trust more to follow than Jesus? He knows everything about you, but he still loves you so much, he died for us. And if you think that is amazing, look where it goes from here. It says, he is a leader who endured the agony for our suffering when at any moment he could have turned away. It says, for this reason, the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me. Circle that. But I lay it down of my own account. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father. We often think about this in this Passion Week, that we think once Jesus was condemned by Pilate, it was sort of a domino sequence. So once that first one had been pushed, Jesus was now sort of being forced through the process. And that is a completely unbiblical picture. The Bible tells us that at any moment in that process, he could have said, this is too much. This is too hard. I am done. And in that moment, he could have called 10,000 angels to his rescue. He could have completely obliterated the planet. He could have obliterated world history. All of it snuffed out in a moment. He could have done that. But he didn't. As he had his hands cuffed together, and as the cat of nine tails was ripped across his back, and the hooks in the cat of nine tails grabbed chunks of his flesh and ripped them out of his body, at any moment he could have brought it to an end, but he didn't. He didn't, because he was dying for you and he was dying for me. He was being the good shepherd who was dying for us, the idiot, unteachable sheep. That is how much he loves us. Remember, with the cat of nine tails, they wouldn't do more than 40 lashes, because they figured after that, the sheer sensory overload from the agony of having flesh torn off your body was enough so someone would die of sheer agony. He did that for us. And then when he hung on that cross, remember what the cross is. The cross was, remember, was invented by the Persians. It was perfected by the Romans. It was intended to be the most gruesome, agonizing way they could kill a human being. In fact, they came up with a whole new word to describe the level of pain experienced on the cross. And it carried over into our English. It's called excruciating pain. literally meaning the pain only on the level of the cross itself. And at any moment, he could have said, enough is enough. I'm done. This is too hard. But he didn't. He died for us because he loves us. And even at the moment of his death, that was not controlled over him, but was controlled by him. What did he say? It is finished. And then he chose to breathe his last. And he tore his spirit in that moment out of his body. Maybe something that would have been more agonizing even than the lashes, more agonizing even than the cross itself, was when he died for you and for me. That is how much he loves us. Folks, everybody is following somebody. The only question is who? And are they worth following? Is there anybody else out there who is more worthy to follow and to give your life to than Jesus? No. Now, let me just give you two quick roundups here at the end, because I want to give us some application. Obviously, Jesus is the one that is most worthy to follow in all things with all of our life. But how do we do that? How do we follow him on a daily basis? Two things. And there's a lot more, by the way, to dig into in your small group worksheets tonight. Number one, we follow him comprehensively. And that means we need to follow him in all areas of our life. Everything about us, we should submit to him and turn to him. I'll give you an example. I was reading this week as I was studying about a lady who had an ongoing affair with a man. Her husband was often out of town on business, and she was lonely, and so she developed this affair. And this guy would come over, and she'd sleep with him when her husband was gone. But the interesting thing she did is whenever this man came over, she went through the house and took all the pictures of her husband, and she turned them face down. She said, yeah, he's not part of this one area of my life. I have a question for you. What areas of your life are you turning the picture of Jesus face down? Maybe for you it's your media choices. You know, what do you watch on the television? Is that, it's my time. It's my time to watch what I want. What do you watch with movies? What do you watch on the internet? Jesus, you have that part of my life, but this is mine. How about your money? Oh, that was sort of a giveaway, wasn't it? Your money? You know, the way we approach it is say, God, I give you your 10%, the 90% is all mine. Really? Follow him comprehensively in all areas and in all ways. Nobody loves you more. His plans are good for you. His plans are to give us life abundantly. We need to follow him at all things. And the last one here is this. Follow him consistently. Consistently. Follow him consistently. As I was thinking about what this means, I realized that in times of the day, I'm more apt to follow God than others. Do you guys have that? I'm pretty good about between 8 and noon. And then as I get tighter, you know, and as my kids come home and things, you know, my wife has this thing, she called it the witching hour. You guys know what that is? Around 4:30, when you're exhausted, the kids are pulling at you, dinner has to get on the table, your husband is coming home, and you get to this deal like, okay, I'm following Christ in the morning. I had my quiet time. It was great. But right now, you kids get back in the corner. What is that? Let's put God in his box and leave him in there. And then when it's nice and safe, I'll take him out again. Here's my challenge for you. Don't keep God in the box. Let him rule all areas in all times of our life. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you for this text, which just so much expands our understanding of what a good leader, what a good shepherd you are. That you loved us so much that you died, and the agony you went through willingly, moment by moment, a simple change of the position of your mind at any moment could have torn you off that cross. But you didn't. The whole time you suffered thinking about us. dying for us as sheep. Lord, forgive us for trying to lead ourselves in different areas and at different times. I pray that you would help us to follow you completely and totally this week. We ask this in Christ's name. Amen.
This has been a presentation of Faith Church. More of Pastor Kurt's sermons can be found online at christtoourculture.com. Thanks for being with us, and may God continue to enrich your life.